as these students outside are campaigning mm-hmm. for Associated Students Executive Board, what are some of the main issues you see as affecting the people who get elected this next year?
Affecting the people that get elected? Wow, that's a huge topic. You know, the student government is a unique position on campus. Some people still think of it as your high school ASB, the events board, the fun, happy, good luck times. And what is often a rude awakening for the people who get into office is, wow, we actually have real stuff we have to deal with. We have policies. We're being asked for our input on policies that will affect everyone. We're being asked to make decisions, appoint people to committees. Basically, every decision that happens on the campus, the student government gets asked about. And so it's incumbent on the people who get elected to those positions to take that seriously. It's tempting to just sort of let it go by the wayside and say, you know what, we really don't care about that, so do whatever you want. But there are so many things that will affect us. It could be a facilities plan, which to a Joe Standard AS member may think, you know, oh, that's okay, they're just going to build a building. But that building's going to house students. It has to serve the students. Where should things go? So, and whether we should have recycled runoff water. You know, these things affect students because that will then lower our bills. And lowering our bills means that we can put on more classes. So there are many different things that we do on campus that the student government has to have a hand in. And I hope that the candidates running will realize that and that they'll realize that there's more to it than the fun stuff you see in the front. There's a lot of stuff that happens in the background, which regular students don't see. And that's the point of Associated Students, is so that we can make these tough choices elected by the students to make the opinions, make the positions known so that the campus makes the best decision, in theory, should make the best decision for the students. Now, it doesn't always happen that way. And that's where it's important for the student government to be willing to stand up and say it's a bad decision, it should be changed, we should go through a different process. And I'll mention that that's hard. You know, I'm a little bit older and I've done this a little bit longer now. But even now, going to a vice president or a president of the college and telling them that I think they're doing something wrong or that they should be doing it differently or that there is a, you know, I have a differing opinion is intimidating. It's very difficult. You know, we're just students. But your student government representatives have to be willing and able to do that, because otherwise it doesn't matter whether you disagree or not, or whether something's in the best or worst interest of students, if you're not willing to stand up for that position. And that's the hardest thing for a student government to do, but it's the most important.
And you've had a lot of experience with that in the past 3 years. Well, you've been here 4 years now, 2010, right up until right now. What was your first experience with having to do something like that?
The first was actually the bus pass. And this was where the $10 student activity fee was my very first conflict in AS. And it was literally as I got elected. The district wanted to take – so originally – let me back up a little bit. We have a bus pass on campus, the ITAP, which is the $30 a semester pass that gets you on all metro, rail, and buses. That was originally funded 50% by the district and 50% from the student activity fee, that $10 that you pay each semester. The district didn't feel like the student activity fee was being used in the best way. Now, I think that was an unfair assessment because it had only been operating for a year. But the district decided to take 100% of the money for the ITAP program from the student activity fee. So already around about $300,000 of the $600,000 collected goes to the bus program, and that's it. And my argument was that we shouldn't do that, that we should give it a couple more years, fund other things. In fact, Lancer Lens was funded through the student activity fee through a project I created, the Student Activity Fee Initiative. So that's why we have PCC1 now, because we gave $72,000 to help start that up. But the district disagreed. And so that was the very first conflict. It wasn't the most major, but it was the first.
And ever since then, it seems that that has put you in good shape to handle everything else that has come since.
Well, and you know, it hasn't always been conflict and terribleness. There have been times when we've agreed. I think, you know, with block scheduling that's coming up, I think there's some broad agreement that our scheduling needs to change by the students, that the overlap isn't working. I do think that we've agreed with administration on pathways programs and how those are helping, especially our first year, our underrepresented students succeed. We're seeing some great numbers out of the pathways program right now. Whereas especially African-American, Hispanic students going through the traditional program are not succeeding as well. In the pathways program, we're seeing nearly 100% persistence rate through that. and a much higher completion rate because of the way Pathways is structured. So that's a good thing.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, and that's one great thing that the district is doing. I think pedagogically what we're doing with our curriculum, especially with the MathPass accelerated jams, the Pathways, the first and second year experience programs, these are wonderful things the district's doing and should be commended for, absolutely. And credit where credit is due, a lot of that comes from a group of faculty dedicated to doing this. You know, I have deep respect for the Academy of Professional Learning, which is a faculty group on campus, and they've used some grant money from the college to really provide them with this opportunity and this time to develop themselves, develop the curriculum, and we're seeing the dividends right now. That's one great place. There are other decisions, not so much, but that's one where I think the district does deserve props.
We definitely need to mention that PCC. I think we both love PCC. I think we both agree it's a pretty wonderful school.
Absolutely. You know, I think that I wouldn't care so much and be willing to have these conflicts if I didn't love this place so much. And I think that that's a mark of what a wonderful school this college is and what it can be. That's the biggest thing for me. I see the potential.
Coming to PCC, how is it different than you thought it was going to be in your own journey as a student? And how is it exactly like you expected?
Oh, my goodness. It's so different. I moved to the United States 8 years ago. And so I lost my job in the recession in 2009 and came back to school in 2010. What I anticipated was more of a British system where you come in, you tell them what your major is, you take all of these major classes, you're done. What I found out is that you really have to struggle a bit to figure out your general education, which was a brand new concept to me. You had to figure out when you had to figure out your own schedule. That was huge to me. Counseling appointments were difficult. You know, I think when I first came in, I was very confused, overwhelmed. It's a big place, a lot of confusing places. You walk into the L building, you get told to go to 10 different counters and get 10 different answers. And they're working on that now, which is I know that there's some changes happening there. But at the time, it was very difficult. What I didn't realize at the time was we were having another transition in leadership. We had interim president Sugimoto, who was running the college on an interim basis. We had Vice President Van Pelt. We had all of these different people. And so it was a very different environment 4 years ago. Now, going through it, I think, you know, I have great respect for my teachers. I think that they do their best and they really do care. I don't think I've had a bad experience with a professor on campus, which has been fantastic. Sometimes I do wish I hadn't gone behind the curtain to see the wizard, and that I could have gone through blissfully unaware of a lot of the stuff that happens behind the scenes. I think that being involved in student leadership, especially at the board level, especially everywhere, it's such a different perspective on higher education than I had when I came in. And I do think the general student doesn't see it, but they should. I think it's important that everyone sees why we make decisions, what we're doing. Why is the nursing baccalaureate such a contentious issue for some people? Why is commencement a problem? What is the politics behind it? And that was the one thing I didn't realize was the intense politic of administration, of decisions that are made on campus. And that was a little disheartening to me, I'll be honest.
Intense politic is really something.
And, you know, I think that we're all here for students. And as a student, I can say that everyone here should be working for students. That's my position. And on the surface of it, it doesn't seem like that's always the case. When I went behind the curtain, I realized that that is the case. Everyone is working for students. It's just we all have a very different idea of how to get there. So my journey, I come out of PCC now, and this is my last semester. So I'll be leaving with a very different idea of what higher education is in the United States. And I'm grateful for it. I'm very grateful for having had that opportunity. And I'm not a special student. I'm a struggling student. I am broke. I don't have much in the way of opportunities. I know I sound a little like I have a lot of this, you know, great stuff right now, and there is this perception. I think the people who get involved in student government are a specific type of person. No, we're just students too. So all the things that I've done, good or bad, you know, any student can do. All they have to do is be willing to want to do it and to stand up and say, you know what, this is what I feel is right. And that's the one thing, you know, I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but of all of the conflicts I've had, whether the district agrees with me or not, whether I have made an enemy or a friend, or whether I've said something that people haven't liked, I can feel comfortable leaving PCC and knowing that I always did what I thought was best interest of students and what I thought was right. And at the end of the day, no matter the conflict, no matter the cost, no matter the benefits or the gains or the losses, I don't have a single regret. And that's fantastic to say after 4 years.
That's great to be able to say. You and I are listening today to Simon Fraser, PACCD student trustee. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the campus climate, Simon's journey as a student, and we're going to be talking about something that's making the headlines right now when we return here on Over Coffee. This is Dot Cannon on LancerRadio.org. This is the Lancer Radio Network, streaming live on www.lancerradio.org, Pasadena Campus Sounds, and this is Over Coffee with Dot Cannon. Today, talking with Simon Fraser, PACCD student trustee, who we are fortunately going to lose him. He's going to graduate in 3 weeks. Congratulations,
Thank
Simon.
You.
And we're talking about campus climate pretty much. Mm-hmm. We've got two pretty important issues to discuss right here, and let's see if we can hit them both. The headlines today in the PCC Courier talk about a commencement speaker. And the story behind that, you say, is a little bit different than is reported. What would you tell me about that?
So I first became aware, I knew who Dustin Lance Black was, the screenwriter for Milk, an important figure in my community, specifically as an LGBT person. And at November, I was at the Community College League of California's conference. They're an organization that represents districts and CEOs, CEOs being college presidents. And he was given a Distinguished Community College Alumni Award. And what I found out at that presentation was he got his associate's degree from PCC. And I was amazed. And there was not a dry eye in the room when he was done. It was a fantastic speech. So I reached out. I thought that it would be brilliant to bring him onto campus. So I reached out independently of the commencement discussions and said, I'd love for Mr. Black to come onto campus just to talk to us. And we started to go through, you know, back and forth with that. And then I did go to the commencement committee and I said, well, what about Dustin Lance Black? He's fantastic. He's a great speaker. He came from this campus and he could relate to the students because he sat there, you know, 10, 20 years ago, whatever it was. He sat in those seats. And that was well received. The commencement committee did discuss it and was very enthusiastic. There were other names, of course, that were presented. A shortlist was sent to the board, which the board approved on March. And then an email was sent out. Turns out it was sent out to all 8 people. And the direction was whoever has the nearest connection should extend that. So I was asked through the Office of Student Affairs to do that since I'd already had contact with him through this other issue. So because I had that, I sent an email acting as the messenger on behalf of the college. And I did that under complete direction. So I think there's a perception. I think that some people in the district are trying to make it seem that I acted outside of my bounds or that I went above and beyond what I should have done. And I want to be clear that I did not, that everything that I did was exactly within line with what was happening to all of the other speakers. Mr. Black was the only one that accepted and accepted to do it without charge. And that's unusual. No honorarium, no nothing. He was just going to do it and made arrangements and he accepted, came back. And then we were waiting for a few weeks, to make final arrangements. That's what I was told. Then on the April board meeting, suddenly Dr. Rocher and Dr. Bell made this announcement of a new speaker. I was floored.
You were not told ahead of time at all?
I was absolutely not told ahead of time. I was completely taken off guard. And then after discussion, the other trustees had been informed, I found out later the day before. And so then meeting with him, I found out that the main concern was that Mr. Black had some photos of him having sex with his partner, and they were released in 2009 on the internet, I think against his will. And that was the reason, because that was what made him a controversial figure, quote. And that was communicated directly to the Board of Trustees, and then the Board of Trustees somehow, there was no meeting on this, there was no official decision made, but decided to throw out the list. Whether you call that a disinvite or whether you call it an overlook or whether we just decided not to finalize it, that's irrelevant. They decided to skip over Black because of this issue, comparing it to Hugo Schwitzer, as is noted in the Courier today, and comparing it to, and you know, saying that this would be negative publicity for the college. And I felt, and I still feel very hurt by that decision, personally. And not because I made an outreach, not because I was involved in the communication between the college and Mr. Black's team, but because it is such a wrong decision. It is such a viscerally painful one to know that private conduct, private legal consenting conduct is treated at a higher standard. We don't ask a pregnant celebrity why they had unsafe sex. We don't ask for the rate of condom usage among our other commencement speakers. So why on earth would it matter here? What could possibly make it so different? And what could possibly compel us to compare a professor who was hired at this district, abused his position to abuse students, to a man who had unknowingly his conduct released online, his private legal consenting conduct leaked online, completely unrelated? It's absolutely terrible. It's the worst kind of decision to make, and for the wrong reasons. And it's damning to PCC's alumni relations, right? In my concern, you know, I have reevaluated whether I will be connected with PCC after I leave here. And I wanted to be. I wanted to go back into the community, participate in the college. And now I don't know if I feel comfortable doing that because this is an alumni. Whether or not he was officially invited is irrelevant to me. He was looked over. An Oscar-winning student of this college was overlooked because of revenge porn.
Mm-hmm. And that's just it. I'm thinking, thank goodness none of my ex-boyfriends had access to YouTube way back when.
Well, yeah, neither of us, I don't think, have Oscars. So imagine if that's how they're going to treat someone who's won an Academy Award. What about
Yikes.
Us?
it
does sound bad. And I think that as well, the other thing for me is the process. We went through a process to pick speakers. And the students have very clearly said, and I've been at the AS board meetings, and they've said, look, this is the speaker that we want. And I'm sure that the one that they've chosen is a fantastic individual. But this is not the person that went through the process. This is not the person who was selected and should have been selected, you know, and was available and is one of us. There are so many issues that I can, you know, talk on about this. And it's very ironic to me that all of this came at the exact same time we had the technical visit on Monday, where the statewide academic senate and the league came down to talk to us about participatory governance. But at that meeting, they didn't just talk about participatory governance and the rights and roles and responsibilities of each of the parties and who gets the final say. They also talked about trust and goodwill and faith and acting in the best interests of everyone and the best interests of the students. Goodwill to meet each other halfway, to understand that there are good intentions. The trust that the process is done in the fair way. The belief that we're going to do what everyone feels is right, if that's a compelling reason. And the other thing is that the board should not overstep into operational issues. All of these things were discussed. And then at the same time, there was a unilateral top-down decision to completely change the commencement speaker. It's a height of irony, as far as I'm concerned. And when I say this hurts, it's so upsetting that the many queer students on this campus have now lost out on an opportunity to see someone just like them who made a fantastic success of himself. And not just the queer students, but every student on this campus. That's what we should aspire to. His face, Black's face, should be on the distinguished alumni boards that we have all across the campus on the lampposts.
Yeah, it certainly should. You know, I'll be talking about an artist later on this show who was made a great success of himself. And indeed, Black should be named as well. He should have received an award very similar to the artist I'll be discussing.
I agree with you.
And the other thing about that is I can appreciate that you were put in a position of actually having hurt somebody that you really admire because of what the board has decided.
And, you know, I think there is an element that, you know, I did make this initial outreach. And even though I was just a messenger for that contact, you know, I do hope that Mr. Black is aware that there are students on this campus who really did want him to come here.
I would love to hear him speak.
Yeah, it is fantastic. And I, you know, the Courier article is only, there are a couple of minor technical issues around the who went what and who said and who invited whatever. I don't think that's the point. The point needs to be, why was this person overlooked? What was the decision? And Dr. Feller, the president of the board, went very clearly on record with that. And normally, I will always stand with my colleagues on the board as a board member when we make a decision we stand together as one voice. And in my mind, when I look back, the only decision the board has ever formally made was to approve that one list. And so as far as I'm concerned, that's what I'm supporting. I'm supporting the process that we went through. I'm supporting that original list. And I'm supporting the candidate, the only candidate on that list, who said, yes, I would love to come.
What can students do when they hear something like this? What action can they take?
At this point, very little. That's the problem, is that there is very little that can be done because it's already now, it's done. You can't change it now. I think that students can voice frustration and protest, or they can voice support. They can voice either way. And I think that's important, that the views of the students be communicated to the Board of Trustees, to the president of the college, to the student government. These are the three people who really need to hear what students have to say. Whether one way or the other, whether you agree with me or disagree, making that voice heard is important in all issues.
What are the avenues by which students can make their voices heard, including some of the legal options that may be available to them they might not know about?
Well, the legal options are very difficult, you know, because there's a very limited sphere, so I'm not going to touch that, especially not being a lawyer. But what I will say is that the best ways they can communicate is through email and letter. Absolutely. Writing a letter to the college, sending an email to your representatives. All of the trustees' emails are on the website. All of the AS emails are on the website, pasadena.edu. You can just look them up. And making that outreach is the best thing you can do. Asking for feedback, asking for someone to call you back. And if they don't, keep on it. Whether it's this AS president, whether it's the student trustee, the president of the college, don't stop. If you want a response, keep asking for a response. And it's because otherwise, no one will know that you actually care about an issue. And I think that's the thing, is that it's easy to let an issue go by the wayside. If you really care, you can't let it go. And that's the thing that, for me, when these big issues happened, like Mr. Black, like the calendar last year when I was AS president, like the bus pass, the big issues were I just didn't let go. And even though the decision didn't always go in my favor, at least they knew exactly where I stood on behalf of students. But I had the backing of students. People did contact me about the bus pass, about the calendar, voluminous emails on the calendar. And so I knew that I'd had that feedback, and when I said what I said to the board, to the president of the college, the administration, I knew that I had the backing of students then. And that was so important because it meant I wouldn't let go either.
So I've heard you say, have courage, let go. You may wind up getting hurt. Even so, be prepared for that. What would you consider, in addition to those, as we wrap up, has been one of the best lessons you've learned about leadership from what you've done here at PCC?
Wow. I think it's having the integrity to stand up for what you believe in. Like I said, it's hard to say, it's hard to argue with people. It's hard to risk a conflict. But it's better to do that than walk away at the end of the day feeling like you should have done more or you should have said something. And even if I'm considered the most annoying nuisance that won't shut up, if I had walked away at the end of the day and felt like I could have done more, I could have said more, than that I've done my job wrong. I was elected 3 times to serve the interests of the students. And whether the students agree with me or not, whether the administration agrees with me or not, I did what I thought was best. And I think that's the best lesson that I could learn, was to always do what you feel is right. And it served me well. I did have other lessons about how to say things and how not to come across as a complete, you know, insane person, just a crazy rabble-rouser. But no matter how you phrase something, no matter the ways that you attack an issue or approach an issue, just doing what you feel is the right thing will always steer you in the right way.
Simon, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Dot. It's been a pleasure.